Hey, how you doing? What goes on in Sharkland? This is Eric, head of Shark School, with another episode of Let's Talk Shark. In today's episode, I would like to talk a little bit about shark-human interaction, its beginnings, problems, goals. It's a really new research, and I started that in the early 90s. Mind you, the early 90s, what we knew back when was agonistic display. That was pretty much the only thing that we were aware of sharks, but nothing else. My revelation, my epiphany actually started or came to me when I was in the Maldive Islands. I was diving and I saw my first black-tip reef shark, a little bugger. And this female, she looked at me, I looked at her, and I realized there's something going on. And this something was what really, really intrigued me. And I wanted to figure out, how do sharks see humans? What influences a situation with them and us? What factors determine the outcome of a situation? And on and on. Mind you, back when, it was the early 90s, we didn't really have the underwater cameras. It was just started. And we could not just take the tape and plug it into a laptop and analyze the videos. I still remember when I got my first video program. It was amazing. But back then, we had really not that easy, but still we needed getting going. Some of us may still remember VHS tapes. That was the common way of distributing your footage in VHS tapes. And I still remember I quite often had to go to a professional studio just to convert NTSC format to PAL. But when I started, I really didn't really know where to go because there was nothing except, of course, shark bites. Everybody seemed to be an expert on shark bites. But what I learned early on, that even these experts in the early 90s, late 80s, none of them was really in the water with these sharks, among these sharks. They were studying complete different aspects, but not shark-human interaction. So I thought, okay, in order to get an idea what goes on, I have to videotape sharks and humans, sharks and sharks. I had to videotape a shark from a shark's viewpoint and try to get an idea what goes on. Many years later, I created the shark-human interaction concept, Adori Sane, which really is based on this early research. In another episode of Let's Talk Shark, we will get into that. Understanding influencing factor. This was pretty much what guided me through my university career. I'm a behavioral ecologist. I'm interested in pressure of the environment. How does pressure of the environment influence a behavior of an animal? But again, I had a lot of problems in the beginning because, for example, saying, well, I want to work with a tiger shark in this next few weeks. We didn't know where to go by chance. So we found them in the Bahamas. Today, of course, we have places like Tiger Beach or Fiji. Same with bull sharks. We know where these animals hang out. But of course, then we have the influence of conditioning a shark. So how does a shark react naturally versus being conditioned? And then we didn't really have the sights to repeat an experiment. Repeating an experiment is very, very important. Otherwise, you cannot say, well, I think this or that. No, you have to show it through statistics that an effect can be shown. I remember very early on, I realized that when I went from a horizontal position and a vertical position, when a shark showed up, the animal stayed further away. Or, for example, whenever I turned around, I had the feeling that more sharks came from behind. But a shark that comes from behind must understand our body orientation. How could that be? How could a shark determine where the front and back of humans are? Well, I still do not really have the answer, but I've proven that the shark knows. So there's one thing to prove something, but another to understand why that is. And of course, another problem that really bothered me for many years was liability. I was not allowed, or supposedly, I should not have done that, using humans for research. But how can you test shark-human interaction if you cannot use the humans? So once I relocated everything to the Bahamas, I started or was able to do it. But at the same token, we needed setups for these experiments. We had to repeat these experiments. We had to have sharks in these areas to repeat experiments. So it was not an easy thing to get started. What we realized early on was, however, that depending on our activity, free diving, diving, snorkeling, swimming, scuba diving, sharks behave differently. So we realized it has to do with the water column or with being at the surface or not at the surface. But as simple as these statements are, they are quite complicated. Some work quite complicated sometimes to actually prove. Things changed in the last 25 years, but some things are still the same. There are still way too many people out there who are afraid of sharks. Something I always say is there's no dangerous shark, but dangerous situations. And these dangerous situations are always created by us humans, knowingly, unknowingly, or by third parties. Knowingly, for example, is you pull the tail of a shark. Well, then you know that is something stupid and you might get bitten. Unknowingly is maybe you have no clue when you splash around this area that there are sharks close by. Third parties would be, for example, you're swimming down current of a fishing pier. People fish, and through the activity of fishing, a shark is lured in, which then actually bites you. I'll go into all these topics, fishing piers, and so on, in a later episode of Let's Talk Shark. For now, I just would like to mention that difference in activities has a different approach pattern of sharks. The shark is lured in through a different type of sensory organ. Most of the time, of course, it is sound. But as we discussed in earlier episode, sound can only go so far or be heard, depending on the waves, how close you are to breakers, to reefs, shore areas, and such. It was a wild time, a very wild time back when, and a lot of frustration, but at the same token, it was also a big satisfaction because we started to find new things. There was new terrain, no one has done it, no one has tried, and of course, we could take the shark out of this instinct-driven animal picture and presented them as a thinking creature like you and I. And even today, it still baffled me when I tell people, well, you know, the shark just did that, he wants to do this or that, and people say, well, shark is instinct-driven, he does not have a conscious mind. Well, to prove consciousness in animals is quite tricky. But it's much easier to accept the fact that the shark actually thinks and does voluntarily this or that than thinking it's just an instinct-driven animal. We have plenty, really, we have plenty of evidence that a shark is not a mindless eating machine, but a thinking creature. And interesting is when you actually analyze a bite. In a bite, you can really, really see where a shark, quote-unquote, comes from. A shark bite is nothing like an instinct-driven issue. Of course, some of my colleagues believe in the sneak attacks and hit and run, bump and bite, hit and run issues. Of course, that's nonsense. That's absolutely nonsense. You cannot have shark bites classified in three categories. That's just not possible. But when you start to get into shark bites, you quickly see that there's a lot of thinking behind a shark. But back when, it was really hard sometimes to get to these incidents. And if you had a bite, the majority of bites are very superficial. You may have a slash, you may have a puncture wound. But what species was responsible? Of course, most of the time, you ask the victim, and the victim just mentioned these sharks that were common in the vicinity. So most of the time, the shark, they thought, did the deed, was not the shark that actually did it. So I remember the first thing I had to do, this forensic analysis of shark bites, I had to get different types of shark jaws, different species, different sizes, and then I created methods. I was using clay on like mannequins and recreated these wound pictures. So it was a lot of trial and error back then. But at the same time, besides, it was a lot of fun. It is a lot of fun to show that sharks are really not what people think they are. Time changed, yes. And in the beginning, the movie Jaws was part of it. Unfortunately, the movie Jaws is still a part of it. But the more we interact with white sharks, you can interact with a white shark. You don't have to be in a cage when you see a white shark, because these animals have the same problems like all the other sharks as well. And it's very interesting, although a white shark, yeah, much larger than we are, the shark does not know that is superior to us with regards to speed and power. Most white sharks that I've encountered were shy, hesitant animals. So we have to actually work with as many species as possible. But the more species we examine, the more we realize they're pretty much all the same. Not the same as like humans, they all react the same way or all react a different way. But we realize that all of these animals, they're individuals. Individuals that have their daily problems like you and I. Sometimes we have a tiger shark for several days. And each day the situation is different. Sometimes the shark is very shy. The next day is a little more bolder. But the other day he doesn't even show up, and then he comes only quickly. So there are a lot of factors that influence these situations, and we just started to get a better idea what goes on. But as I already mentioned, it's very, very important that we understand that there is no such thing as a dangerous shark, only dangerous situations that we humans create. What is the goal of all this research? Of course, we want to make it even safer for humans in the water, than that people know when a shark shows up, this is what you have to do. But at the same token, we want, of course, show that these sharks are not what we think they are. Sharks are still the most abundant top and super predators on our planet, over 100 pounds. We need the sharks, but we kill about 70 to 100 million sharks each year. So sooner or later, the sharks will not be able to do that job anymore. One reason why we kill so many sharks, or we allow that so many sharks are killed, is, of course, people are afraid of these animals. What we fear, we destroy. That is something that goes on for way too long. Just because we're afraid does not mean we have to ignore it or have to accept or allow that sharks are killed in such a magnitude. We need the sharks. The slaughtering of sharks is probably the biggest ecological time bomb of our time. When this bomb goes off, I don't want to be here anymore. So I will do everything possible to defuse this ecological time bomb. And probably the best way is to explain to the general public that sharks are not what we think they are. They're not these dangerous animals. We don't have to be afraid of them. But we really have to protect them in order not just to protect sharks, the oceans, but us as well. We will discuss many of these just mentioned ideas, in fact, in upcoming podcasts of Let's Talk Shark. For now, for today, that's it. Tune in again for another show of Let's Talk Shark. Have a great day. And if you meet a shark out there, have fun, enjoy the moment, and remember, it is a privilege.